Feminist leadership. If you pay attention to dominant leadership models in the international social sector, you may have noticed that feminist leadership seems to be on the rise. In a series of podcast episodes, which I kick off today, my aim is to interrogate a little bit why feminist leadership is on the rise as a desired leadership model. What are its clear strengths? Are there any trade-offs posed by feminist leadership? What are the tensions with other desired leadership behaviors or competency requirements? And what are its limitations? We are a bit prone in the I&JO world, after all, to fads. In this first of several interviews, I talk with Abby Maxman, CEO of Oxfam America, who regularly is held up as somebody with clear strengths in feminist leadership behaviors. Abby is somebody who I've known and observed as a leader for a long time, and I value her insights. Later on in the series, I also discuss the topic with Aruna Rao, Lisa Veneklaassen, Joanne Sandler, and I'm working on an interview as well with Srilata Patliwala, who importantly often is cited as one of the originators of the concept behind feminist leadership. Enjoy! Hello and welcome to NGO Soul and Strategy, the podcast for NGO leaders and managers who look change right in the eye. My name is Tosca Bruno van Vijfheiken, and I'm the founder and principal consultant at Five Oaks Consulting. I have over three decades of experience helping leaders in civil society and philanthropic organizations manage change, invest in cutting-edge leadership development, lead organizational culture change, and strengthen organizational effectiveness. If you are in an international civil society leadership position or are aspiring to grow towards that, this podcast is for you. Hello, everybody. This is Tosca at NGO Soul and Strategy. And today we're starting a series on feminist leadership. Why feminist leadership? Because I have noticed in the last, 4 to 5 years, a growing interest amongst some mid to large size INGOs in particular in adopting feminist leadership as the dominant leadership model or framework in their organizations. And I've done some work on this myself in terms of developing curriculum for senior leadership trainings on the topic of feminist leadership. So I thought it was a good idea to devote a couple of episodes in my podcast around it. So today we are going to talk with Abby Maxman, the CEO and president of Oxfam America. Abby, welcome.
So good to be with you, Tosca.
I am looking forward to this, and I'll say later to our audience why I asked you, why I had you in mind right off the bat. But I should also tell people that I am going to interview several other people with very strong backgrounds in feminist leadership, such as Aruna Rao, Lisa Veneklaassen, Joanne Sandler, and I'm hoping also to interview Srilata Patliwala. But let me first explain to our audience a little bit, what is feminist leadership? So it falls within the realm of models of transformational leadership, which is a school of leadership thinking, which in a nutshell, and I'm really summarizing it very briefly, that emphasizes the ability of leaders to motivate employees to find intrinsic meaning in their work, and leaders who are able to generate a willingness, an energy among staff to go over and beyond what their jobs requires of them. So obviously, feminist leadership to the outside world is very much about creating a gender-just world. And obviously, Oxfam is has that as part of its mission. But in this series, I would like to focus more on the internal organizational attributes and implications of feminist leadership, how it works out internally in organizations. So I will just quote here well-known feminist scholar and activist Srilata Batliwala, who says that, quote, our concern is not merely with capacitating more women to play leadership roles, but rather to lead differently, with feminist values and ideology both externally and internally, and to advance an agenda of feminist social transformation, obviously externally, but also internally to lead with more shared leadership models, a focus on emotional intelligence, on relational leadership, on collaborative leadership skills, collective decision-making, being very developmental as a leader, by which I mean being focused on the development of other people in the organization, as well as a focus on self-care and staff care. But of course, in Oxfam, it may well be articulated a little differently, so we're going to find that out. So I am interested to interrogate feminist leadership a little bit more. I'm a feminist myself. I am totally okay with the external societal goals of feminist leadership. But as feminist leadership has risen in some NGOs, I'm interested to explore with my interviewees not just what are its strengths and where does it shine, but also what are the trade-offs, the tensions, and the limitations. So, over to Abby now, and Abby, of course, to first introduce her. She is, as I said, the president and CEO of Oxfam America, a former also deputy secretary general at CARE International. She also was the VP for international programs and operations at CARE International and was a country director in CARE as well. Abby, once again, welcome. I'm going to turn to you immediately now and ask, what does feminist leadership mean to Oxfam? Tell me more.
Thank you, Tosca. And I'm so glad you're bringing attention to this as a place to learn and explore and interrogate, because any form or style of leadership is imperfect. There is no silver bullet, but right. There is something very important about an approach to leadership that is in line with one's own values and that of the organization. So I start there because as Oxfam has been on its own learning journey and evolution over decades, if not in recent years, and the privilege I've had to be a part of Oxfam, in its own learning about, as you started off saying, what's happening on the external and the social change agenda, but how important and fundamental that is in terms of mirroring that of what you do on the internal. Mm. So in simple terms, it might be, you know, walk the talk. And that really means if we talk about social change and empowering women and girls and a feminist principles in our work and how we see social change, it being a prerequisite to how societies and communities all over the world can be healthier and wealthier and better off by changing social norms and these constructs, we have to look at ourselves too. Mm. And so in Oxfam's journey and in my time with Oxfam, we have been deliberate as we were looking at what we learned when we had our misconduct safeguarding experience several years ago, what we have talked about ourselves being a gender just organization, but then identifying our own flaws and our own failings. And what do we do to ensure that we are modeling behaviors consistent with what we say and all that we do? And that is a bit of the journey, I would say, has brought Oxfam to put feminist principles really at the core of our work. And in our strategy for 2030, they are nested not at an end of themselves, but part of what we need to be doing in our commitment to making social change in the world is looking at ourselves as well.
As well. So let's talk a little bit more. I'd like to unpack a little bit about the leadership behaviors and actions that come from feminist leadership internally, right? So, for instance, in one of the concepts notes of Oxfam that I read a little while ago, I understood feminist leadership to be described as meaning that the personal is political, which of course is something that, that feminism famously has said since the 1960s, that nothing about us will happen without us, the concept of intersectionality, that men are welcomed, that feminism obviously is a worldwide movement, but it means also power sharing within the organization. It means a strong focus on safety and on staff care and self-care, right? And that there is no economic, social, and environmental justice without gender justice. If for the remainder of this conversation, if we can stay focused on these internal leadership attributes and behaviors that I want, and I really want to focus on the behaviors and the habits, right, of leaders, right? I invited you to this podcast because you are, frankly, sometimes and not infrequently characterized to me as somebody who embodies certain qualities of feminist leadership, and they definitely mean it as a compliment. Okay. So what do you consider its primary strengths from a leadership behavior and habits and action perspective?
Well, there is the where you started as well, Tosca, in the development of others and how to what is my role as a leader in Oxfam? And I think at the, in a very, very basic sense, when I think of myself as a leader, and I've often historically thought myself as a servant leader, but that doesn't mean one always leads from behind. But my role I froze, Tosca.
You did.
I know I froze there.
It's just fine. Please continue. You were saying that the last sentence we had was, as a servant leader said, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm always leading from behind. Could you continue from there?
Thanks so much. Yes. And one's as a leader, and my role is to really bring out the best in the people around me on behalf of our ability to deliver on our mission. And so that does mean in my own mind as a servant leadership is not a single speed of leadership. It can be from behind. It can be a nurturing, empowering, looking and understanding where are the voices all around the organization that we need to know and hear from. But also there are times that it means leading from the front or leading from different places. Mm-hmm. And so it is a very adaptive and situational leadership style, but almost the philosophy at the outset is how do we grow and harvest all of the talent and commitment and expertise of the people all over the organization. And so when we talk about power sharing, also in organizations, we also know that you need and have hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And how is it that you're continuously drawing and even being aware of where voices and leaders and are sitting all over the organization at any given time? And so that kind of constant exploration, curiosity, having spaces, a diverse set of spaces, so that as a leader and my own executive team as well are continuously not just doing hierarchical leadership, but looking at how we're empowering leadership at many levels.
I see. So now I'd like to turn a little bit to this. We all know that both our sector as INGOs, we tend to be a little sensitive to fads, right? Academics have a fancy word for that. They call that isomimicry, right? The mimicking by organizations of other organizations who they consider to be successful, right? So as I said in the introduction, feminist leadership has been, I won't say surging, because it's, I think it's a relatively small circle of organization, but still it has been on the rise as an aspirational or an espoused leadership model, right? That makes me start to wonder, okay, where are the limitations of this model? Where are the tensions and trade-offs? Because leadership is about many things, but one of them definitely, it's about balancing competing interests and competing needs and competing values even, right? So let's run a couple of scenarios and tell me how you felt that feminist leadership in your experience has performed. Where, in what ways has it shined in those circumstances, and where has it, for you, has also shown its limitations? So let's talk about crisis leadership, right? We've had the pandemic for the last 6 to 9 months. We've had other crises before us. Of course, Oxfam, you already referenced it itself, had the sexual misconduct crisis. How well or not does feminist leadership work in when you need to be a crisis leader, Abby?
I think it is a very adaptive leadership approach or style. I think for me, I think it is always the consistent elements is being kind-hearted but tough-minded, being able to listen, nurture, ensure the care of self and others, but also get things done. And when you're in more of acute crises, one of trade-offs, as you mentioned, can be consultation, participation, the extent, the breadth and depth of engagement that I have the privilege to have when there's an urgency or decisions that need to be made quickly. Mm-hmm. And that can feel like, and this is where I don't think it is a total trade-off, but there's a how question. It can feel like I am not being consistent if I'm less consultative in one moment than another, for example, or how one practices approaches of transparency. We can't always have everybody, the level of communication and engagement, one needs to temper for organizational effectiveness and the ability to deliver on our commitments. That too is something that I believe is critical to feminist leadership is living up to one says, you know, do what you say and say what you do.
Yeah.
And being able to do that in a way that is consistent. So in a crisis, I think one of the trade-offs is that urgency and speed that we work in and that can feel to those who might want or be more used to more engagement or more voice to feel like I'm not being consistent. I think the way to remedy that or the mitigation is being aware of that and being clear about the what, when, and why of moving more quickly on something. And always being clear that there's a difference between, engagement and consultation and process and outcomes and where people might not like either a process or outcomes, but at least I can be clear and true to what are the underlying principles of the what and how I've made decisions.
I was going to ask you about another scenario where a decision you feel ultimately has to be made by a small circle of leaders, right? But you have, in fact, already answered that. So let me move to another one. As you know, there's a bit of a, or maybe more than a bit of a sense that our organizations are not lean and not agile enough. These terms are almost overused now, right? To what extent is a lean organization in tension with a focus on the personal and staff care and so on? And to what extent is agility in tension with, again, that felt need for distributed leadership, shared leadership, consultation, nothing about us without us, etc. Have you encountered those at least potential tensions in your leadership?
Yes, Tosca. And I think about the current context. I think most, if not all of us, have been in some form of remote work from home kind of settings with our staff for a long time. And that means there are extra burdens on everybody.
Yes.
Be it having small children at home, people you're taking care of that you don't have the ability to reach. I mean, the everybody has extra burdens.
Yeah.
Of some kind. And that notion of being lean, it means we're not necessarily, I don't even want to ask of everybody to deliver at the pace and speed and urgency of the now, though that is a very mobilizing and galvanizing force as well. People are so seized. You know, it's a true privilege to work for an organization whose role is to be able to respond to the times. Mm. But that notion of being lean and workload, and what does that mean to self-care is a genuine tension. And we're continuously checking in to look at what can we do to create the enabling environment that it helps. But also you have to we don't have more money to spend to hire extra people. You know, you're a little leaner than you want or need to be because people can't be, not everybody's able to work in the ways they even want to. So that's just a real tension. And I think there's a balance of recognizing what does one need to do to be prioritize, to set the clear expectations of priorities. What I've done is I've pivoted and made our goals a little shorter term. We've looked, you know, at the quarter ahead. And even though it's nested in long-term or multi-year goals, trying to be a little more short-sighted is a negative word, but visually, you know, the milestones and the targets you're working towards, kind of boil it down and make it more manageable. I'm not saying that it's been managed perfectly, but that is a strategy I've used. On the agility versus distributed and shared leadership. And, you know, that's something we too, in addition to building feminist principles into our 2030 strategy, we looked at how do we build new ways of working and what does being an agile organization mean in highly uncertain, rapidly changing times. Though that was the certainty we knew when we developed our strategy pre-COVID.
Yes,
and that's the reality that we exploded into the day we launched the strategy.
Yes.
And it does mean you're building the new ways of working in as the modus operandi, that working cross-functionally, working in a distributed, networked way is the norm. And so you're planning that into your ways of working as the predominant way of working. And that has a more horizontal way of engaging with staff. But the tension is there's higher levels of consultation and engagement can make it feel harder to move quickly. Mm. And that's something we have to be mindful of and still setting realistic but ambitious enough deadlines and processes so that we keep moving as well.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. I'll maybe run one more. It's not a scenario, actually. Well, actually, maybe two more. Let me first turn to, what do we do when we as an NGO manager or leader need to hold an individual staff person or a team to account for underperformance? Is that intention at all with the sense that we need to be very developmental, we need to have lots of emotional intelligence, etc.? And then, you know, in the last couple of years also, there's been a lot of allegations of bullying behavior, for instance, in some organizations. And some other people would then say, well, actually, no, that's not bullying. That is just telling somebody some feedback that they need to hear because they didn't perform so well. Talk to me a little bit about how you see feminist leadership perform in those scenarios.
It's a very topical question, Tosca, because it's something I know that we're continuously examining in our approach to people, culture, HR, performance management. Yeah. And I think it is, it can't be a one-time moments of,
right,
you know, all of a sudden, Tosca, I've got some feedback for you.
Yeah.
The relationship that goes into how we work together to setting performance expectations, to actually embracing, you know, a philosophy where we, you know, if you and I are in some sort of reporting relationship, mm-hmm, that we see feedback as a gift, that I would be working to know that you would, if giving me a feedback, if I was the manager in that case, I would know, how am I doing in helping you grow and be your best self?
That's
at the same
right.
time, you would be critically asking me, Abby, I want the hard feedback. Don't just tell me what I'm doing well. Tell me where you could see I could have done better and how, so that I can unpack that with you. And so this is about the safety question. Mm-hmm. How are we creating, as part of our feminist principles, how are we creating safe spaces for that two-way or multi-directional mm-hmm. way of us valuing, you know, being clear about the performance expectations, the what and the how, mm-hmm. both matter. Mm-hmm. If we're just results oriented, how many times some of our listeners would have heard, oh, they're so great in getting results, but they're really hard in the, you know. So that can't, it is the what and the how. They both matter, because otherwise I'm not leading consistently either.
Right.
About my own accountability aligned with our values and feminist principles. So you're not trading off results oriented versus the how one works and how one manages. It's they both matter, and there's a symbiotic relationship between them to really grow and have things that stick and are real as an organization. So it is a hard thing to do and come in all of a sudden and say, hey, Tosca, I've got some feedback for you. And you're like, oh my gosh, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So it is more longitudinal. So you have to be investing continuously in this, and how managers manage, and how we understand what is performance management in terms of looking at the soft side of competencies and how we can measure them and help people embrace feedback and wanting to grow. And me seeing my job and all of us as helping everybody be their best selves. And part of that is the holding accountable and being really clear about expectations and feedback.
Mm. But as you said so importantly, that has to go both ways, right? This is also about the manager also asking for feedback from the supervisee, if you will. So maybe the last element I'll mention is, some feminist leadership academics have called one manifestation of feminist leadership post-heroic leadership, right? So it's the antithesis to the hero-based leadership. We are global organizations, right? That means people come from many national cultures, right? Where national expectations of how leadership looks like may well be in tension with whether it's feminist leadership or another form of transformational leadership, whatever, right? Have you seen those tensions show up both either in yourself here in America, for instance? I find as a European that there are slightly different expectations of how leaders should behave, at least. So have you seen those tensions show up?
Absolutely. In one's own, whether the culture of where you might be a citizen,
yes,
and working as part of a multicultural organization and diverse context, both.
Yeah.
And I think that is where, one's own EQ and humility as a leader, I need to draw on that continuously, because it's not just, you know, there's so many ways of slicing that. There's kind of what people refer to as NGO versus private sector culture, and expectations of leadership in different work settings. There's, European sensibilities and the US expectations. There's multi-generational expectations, yes, about leadership, or intragenerational. And there is just so much at play there. And then, as you say, different cultures value different modes. You know, this is what depends on social norms, and that, yes, can vary in one country alone. There's variations to that, let alone multi-context. So there are very different expectations, and even the term feminist might be a term that puts people off. And I think I continue to view feminist leadership and using feminist principles as a 21st century leadership approach, or as you know, there's other transformational leadership, as you said at the outset. And how do we find the right language to help and set the expectations and be consistent in how one shows up and brings people along and connects with the workforce, if you will, if that's the mode that we're responsible for. And really setting the tone and finding the right terminology to help minimize reactions or the automatic shutdown someone might have, and help everybody embrace that what the organizational culture and expectations might be.
Yeah. Well, this was quite a wide-ranging conversation. If people want to learn more about you, Abby, where should they go?
Thanks, Tosca. A few places. I'm on LinkedIn, Abby Maxman. Twitter, @ Abby Maxman. And then at Oxfam America's website, can go in there, www.oxfamamerica.org.
Good. Well, we will put all of these in the show notes. Excellent. And again, just to remind our audience that this is one of several conversations that we'll be having about feminist leadership. And they will come out probably in early 2021. Thank you, Abby, very much for all your insights. And thank you, listeners. If you have found this podcast episode stimulating, then please help other social sector leaders find my podcast by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about leadership models and leadership blind spots in the transnational NGO sector, that is covered in one of the chapters in our new co-authored book with George Mitchell and Hans-Peter Schmitz, Between Power and Irrelevance, The Future of Transnational NGOs. The book came out in July, and it seems to be having some legs so far, which we are very grateful for. If you want to find out more, then please check out my website, fiveoaksconsulting.org. This is Tosca, and I look forward to spending time with you on NGO, Soul, and Strategy.
Thanks for listening to NGO, Soul, and Strategy. If you want to learn more, have a look at my website, fiveoaksconsulting.org, where you will find posts on topics related to what we discussed today. That's 5, as in the number 5, oaksconsulting.org. You can also find free white papers there, recordings of interviews with me, as well as information about the upcoming book, Between Power and Irrelevance, The Future of Transnational NGOs, of which I'm a co-author, and which will be published in June 2020. Or feel free to email me at tosca@fiveoaksconsulting.org and follow me on my social media channels, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. And be sure to leave a review on iTunes or any of the places where you get your podcasts so that others can find it too. So, until we talk again, this is Tosca at NGO Soul and Strategy, the podcast for leaders who look change right in the eye.